Welcome to the Tucker Carlson Podcast, where every story is an honest story, and not one of them has been massaged or influenced or censored by a corporate gatekeeper. We've made a lot of these. You can find all of it and a lot of exclusive content at tuckercarlson.com. We hope you'll check that out. Here's today's episode. So there are a lot of nightmare stories taking place around the world. And if you sign in to Daily Mail or any news outlet, you're bombarded with them constantly, because this is one of those moments that produces a lot of nightmares in the news. But very few of them are as horrifying as what you're about to hear. And as you hear this story, ask yourself, if you're a father, particularly a parent, would you rather get a cancer diagnosis or have this happen to you? I think most people would probably choose cancer. So this story is from Buffalo, New York. A man called Dennis Hannon received a letter from his five-year-old son's school addressed to, quote, the parent of Ruby Rose. Now, Hannon was confused because he didn't know anyone called Ruby Rose. So he assumed it was a mistake. So he looked into it further and he found out that his ex-wife had secretly been sending their son to school wearing girls' clothes and using a girl's name. And it turned out that she'd been doing that for 2 years since the boy was three. So Hannon, like any normal person, was horrified by this and objected to her actions. And he did it in court. So of course, guess what happened next? He was framed as a bigot and lost medical authority over his son. The state took a core function of fatherhood away from him by force, as they do in, say, fascist countries. It's hard to believe any of this is true, but as far as we can tell, it's absolutely true. And so we thought we would talk to the man suffering through it directly. Dennis Hannon joins us now. Mr. Hannon, thank you so much for coming on. I hope all of that was accurate, but I hope you'll just tell us the story as you experienced it. What happened?
Yeah, absolutely. So that was a very accurate summary. The catalyst was ultimately the letter in the mail from the school. I had no idea. Essentially, Tucker, I was the last to know in a unilateral gender conversion of my child. Not only was I the last to know, I was never even a thought. Nobody had ever reached out to me to see if maybe I wanted to be a part of this transition, to see if maybe, hey, maybe dad should know about this. And it happened by accident because I wasn't receiving any notices from the school. So I reached out to the school on several occasions and they said that there was an issue with the parent portal. When they finally resolved the parent portal, I was shocked when I had received that letter in the mail and they referred to my son exclusively as female pronouns and a name, Ruby Rose Hannon.
So the school obviously knew perfectly well that your ex-wife had decided that your son was now her daughter, and nobody thought twice about this, from what you can tell?
Nobody thought twice. And to make matters worse, my son was living a double life. He was so young at the time, we're talking kindergarten age, right? About 5 years old. So when he was with me, he was a boy. However, when he was in his mother's care and he was at school, he was a girl named Ruby. And this became so normalized to him at such a young age, he had never even thought to reach out to me or say, hey, look, this is what's going on. There was none of that. And I really didn't even discover the full scope of what was happening and when it started to happen until I got through court, through discovery and serving subpoenas and so on.
I mean, you're his father, so I'm not even going to ask the question to you, which is the obvious question. Like, what would that do to a boy if you were to do something that evil to him at that age? But, I mean, that had to have been your first thought.
It was. Nobody, not only did anybody, nobody considered the father, myself, but nobody considered the psychological impact of a unilateral gender transition for a five-year-old. It wasn't just accepted, it was celebrated. And so essentially what we had here, Tucker, was a gender-affirming treatment plan without a diagnosis. My son was never diagnosed with gender dysphoria. He still hasn't been diagnosed with gender dysphoria. And now he lives his life as a very normal boy after I fought very hard for between 5 to 7 years in Supreme Court. I took it all the way to trial. But through discovery, we discovered that he was going to a self-described gender-affirming therapist who specialized in adolescence. And he started going to that therapist at about the age of 3. Okay, and I was never involved. I was never notified of this. And they were practicing gender-affirming care, meaning they were working on socially transitioning my son and my son's identity prior to him even starting school. It came out through court discovery and proceedings that not only was my son never diagnosed with gender dysphoria, but the WPAS standards for transgender care was never followed. This therapist, when he was about 3 years old, never kept any notes of any therapy sessions whatsoever. And that was why she refused a subpoena in at least one instance. So I have no idea what took place during those therapy sessions. I have no idea the kind of aggressive treatment that was in place. But what I do know is that at about age 4, he was referred to a endocrinologist by the name of Dr. Tran. I'm not making this up. The therapist referred my son to an endocrinologist for the sole purpose of puberty blockers, and Dr. Tran, having never met or spoken to my child before, going solely off of the word of the mother over 2 phone calls totaling 45 minutes, came to the conclusion that my son was a candidate or could be a candidate for puberty blockers around the age of 9. I was never involved in this.
Can you tell us Dr. Tran's first name and where this person practices medicine?
So she was and it's a she, I found out later on, it's Maui Tran. I don't know the proper pronunciation of her first name. However, she was an endocrinologist at the University of Rochester. And at the time she was a resident, she was an undergrad. So she had another doctor sign off on her evaluation, I guess you could call it that. And now it's my understanding that Dr. Tran now works and probably thrives in California.
Can you tell us the name of the school that knew that this was being done to your son but didn't tell you and where it was?
I will name the district because there are several schools in that district. It was Kenmore Town of Tonawanda School. And the original therapist who referred my son to Dr. Tran, her name is Andrea Benner.
Andrea Benner. Okay. So I guess you're not supposed to say the names of the people who commit sex crimes against your children, which they did. They committed a sex crime against your son. But I think it's important to do that because, you know, we shouldn't be afraid of transparency and honesty if we're doing the right thing. Obviously extremely upsetting even to hear this story from you. I can't imagine how you felt about it. So what did you do? What did you do next?
I fought. I took the proper legal routes and channels. I fought. It started out in Niagara County Family Court and went to Erie County Family Court and then ultimately Erie County Supreme Court. I had everybody, it wasn't until I had everybody court ordered to only refer to my son by his birth name that it stopped. It wasn't until I started serving subpoenas that I discovered more. So I was able to get people to only refer to my son using his birth name. However, it's very difficult for a child 1 year in school to be known as Ruby Rose and identify as a female, and then next year they're a boy. So it had a long psychological impact, and it still does because my son uses a Chromebook for school. And on that Chromebook, he has access to previous grades, and some of that stuff still has Ruby Rose on it.
Hey, it's Glenn Beck, and I want to thank you for tuning in to my friend Tucker Carlson on TCN. And I want to introduce you to Preborn. When I decided I could no longer stay out of the fight to save our nation's unborn souls, I turned to the ministry of Preborn. They are doing the critical work of saving expectant moms and giving them support to keep their baby. Preborn partners with pregnancy clinics nationwide to offer free ultrasounds for moms facing unplanned pregnancies. The statistics are clear. An ultrasound doubles a baby's chance at life. Every day, they rescue 200 precious babies at Preborn. It is a miracle. They not only rescue the babies, but they rescue the moms as well. All gifts are tax deductible. Will you join us in the fight for the Preborn?
For just $28, you can sponsor one ultrasound. To save a baby's life, dial pound 250 on your cell and say the keyword baby. That's #250 keyword baby, or donate securely at preborn.com/Tucker. That's preborn.com/Tucker.
It's happening daily. We're being conned by the institutions we used to trust. The mainstream media is distracting us with meaningless headlines instead of focusing on the harsh realities facing American families. Time is short before something big happens, and that's why so many folks are preparing. They're becoming self-reliant by investing in emergency food storage from My Patriot Supply. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and secure 4-week emergency food kits for each member of your family. Each kit contains tasty breakfasts, lunches, and dinners, averaging over 2,000 calories per day. Save $50 on each 4-week food kit you purchase. Plus, get free shipping on Ready Hour 4-week emergency food kits. You're not ready if it's not Ready Hour foods. At My Patriot Supply, you can also get solar power generators, water filtration units, heirloom seeds, and survival gear. Order by 3 p.m. and your unmarked boxes ship the same day. Shop MyPatriotSupply.com today. MyPatriotSupply.com.
How old is he now?
He is almost 10.
I assume every person who abetted the sex crime against your son was a liberal white woman. I have to say that, but I'm just guessing. Is that correct?
Absolutely. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Just so we know who the enemy is. I wasn't even allowed to talk to my son about his gender identity. Yeah.
How come?
Because they wanted these court appointed so-called gender specialists to talk to my son for me. They were afraid of influence. So, they didn't want my influence.
Clearly. Who was on your side during this process? I mean, were there any parts of the various government agencies that you dealt with that seemed reasonable and seemed to recognize your right as a father, seemed to recognize biology, who weren't insane?
Nobody. There was nobody on my side. From the attorney for the child, which of course worked for a NGO that probably received state funding to push, you know, these radical gender ideologies and tick a box under diversity, equity, and inclusion. He actually used a staff member to inappropriately influence the treatment plan behind closed doors without me knowing, effectively making himself a witness to the case. I tried to have him removed. That didn't work. The attorney for the child was actually named as a defendant in the case. I was the plaintiff. And everybody, and that's the part that I really want to highlight here, Tucker, is everybody that was in a position of power to do something did nothing. Even after it came out that all of this was just predicated on a big lie, I was still court ordered to take him to a gender therapist at about the age of 6, court ordered, $145 a session, totally out of pocket. And after a year and a half of him going there, I had sole medical authority at the time. I said, you know what? No diagnosis has been made. This is extremely expensive. The child, you know, we're practicing a watchful waiting approach. I can watchfully wait on my own. I asked that he be discharged. Several times the therapist refused. She wrote a nasty letter to the court. And shortly after, I lost my sole medical authority. Now, to your point about exposure, since I have exposed these people, Ms. Binner's office is now closed. There's a rumor that she's working out of her home. And the court-ordered therapist that I was ordered to take my son to changed their name from Psychosexual Health of Buffalo, New York, to now I think it's just mental health care something. But ultimately, she changed her name. It's like the Bon Jovi song, only the names have changed because she's still doing the same thing.
But like insects, when you turn the lights on, they scurried under the cabinets.
Yes, they do. Yes, they do. And that's exactly what happened here. It's awful. It really is.
So, I'm listening to you and, I mean, clearly you had a lot going for you. You're obviously smart, not flattery, but obviously a high IQ person. You have a job, so you can afford to go through the process and you're highly motivated to protect your son. That puts you in a small percentage of, you know, American men your age. You kind of had your wits about you when you were determined to fix this. Would someone who didn't have those things stand any chance at all of saving his son from sexual abuse?
Absolutely not. If this happened to my child, nobody stands a chance. I spent about $150,000 in legal fees. I was court ordered to pay my ex-wife's legal fees. I lost custody. I only have visitation now. I have no medical authority whatsoever. I have no say in any medical decision making or providers. And this is the agreement that I now have to live with. However, Tucker, if I had to do it all again, I wouldn't change a damn thing, because where I may have lost on paper, I won where it mattered the most, because I saved my little boy from these monsters. And that's the most important thing to me. And I think that's why I'm coming forward here now, so that I can hopefully inspire other parents to come forward and talk about this, because I know that I'm not alone.
It's interesting. So you've seen this up close and obviously at the very center of your family and your life. They're doing this to your son. So, but you've dealt with these people a lot, the therapists, you know, the adults up and down the chain who are trying to destroy this child. What do you think motivates them?
That's a great question, and I am so glad you asked that. I was hoping you would ask me that, because I've done a lot of these interviews and nobody has. So I think the real issue that America faces, it's systemic. Okay, now we have providers who took an oath, and the oath is to do no harm. And they perform gender-affirming care. We know that it's not care. It's child abuse. These puberty blockers that they put these kids on, it disrupts their endocrine system, which affects brain development in early childhood years. It's very important. They're mutilating and maiming these kids, all in the name of diversity, equity, and inclusion, when there's absolutely no scientific or medical evidence to support what they're doing. And in actuality, what they're doing is they're masking comorbidities or underlying mental illness that manifests itself on the surface as gender dysphoria. But much like the military-industrial complex, who makes money off of war, or big pharma, who makes money off of pandemics, they are essentially fueling the crisis that drives their market. It's about money. And I think part of this is about votes, because now you have a whole new voter base, very similar to the invasion at our southern border. It's a brand new voter base for people. So this is once again, we're cowering to the radical demands of the 1% at the cost of the 99%. But then the judges, who are in a position of power to do something about it, they employ warfare tactics. They hold custody, visitation, access over your head like a carrot. So you're forced to play ball. And if you don't, what happens is they say that you're denying your child of essential medical treatment, and they will remove your child from your care, similar to the case that we just saw in Montana. The same thing, just that happened. We have education institutions, right, that are getting that sweet, sweet federal funding. And part of that is they have to tick a box under DEI and play ball as well, so they can continue to receive funding. We have the educators who have bills to pay, mouths to feed, and they don't want to rock the boat. They got a good gig, so they keep their head down, they shut up, and they play ball too. So the problem is systemic all the way down the line. And until we stand up and say, no, we're not going to accept this as normal, this isn't normal, and we put our foot down, we're going to continue down the same path that's going to continue to erode society, and the cost is our children. We are essentially giving children the right to consent.
So you, I mean, two more questions. Just to be clear, you think that this process begins, and it is a chain, as you just described it, that ends with people, you know, taking tax dollars to sexually abuse children. But it begins with a single, confused, sad woman seeking more social status. That's the genesis of this.
Yeah, or a high-risk youth, for example, with underlying mental illness.
Right,
you know,
exactly.
A lot of the times it's, you know, a foster kid or something like that. So we see bills right now in the Assembly and the Senate floors that they're trying to codify giving children the right to consent without a parent or guardian present, so they can target those high-risk youth individuals. And it's insane. A child that can't consent to a tattoo can consent to life-altering, irreversible mutilation of their body.
Yeah. Well, at some point, people are going to be held accountable for this. And they're going to wish they hadn't done it. And then my final question is, how did you seem so rational and calm and goal-oriented. How did you maintain that throughout this horrifying ordeal?
I had to. You know, I lost my job. I was a banking vice president I've been a software engineer for a while. I lost everything that I had worked for, but I had to remain calm for my son because I need to be the example that I want to set for him. And when my time is up here on earth, it's his job to take it to the next level. And this isn't about, I'm not here to make money. I'm not here for anything. This is outside of my comfort zone. I am here because I care about the future of America, our rights, our liberties. I care about our children, but more importantly, our children's children. We cannot continue down this path. And I know that you said I sound educated, and I want to throw this out there just to make you laugh. I have a 10th grade education.
Yeah.
So, but well, I know a lot
That's what I mean. Didn't think you went to Wesleyan or Bowdoin or Harvard. No, I meant that as actually educated, aware of what's happening. Read books. But how did you, I didn't even know that you, how did you lose your job in the middle of this?
Yeah, so it was kind of like the perfect storm. I first appeared on a conservative TV network about 2 years ago. And I broke the news about this story, and I was gag ordered. I was threatened to be thrown in jail for 30 days and yada, yada, yada. You know what they always do when you say something they don't like and you expose them. Also, at this time, it was during COVID. So my work was really pushing the COVID jab. I refused to be vaccinated because that was my personal choice. And so between that and being on the news, speaking out and sharing this story, I was told from my boss that the best thing that I could do was resign. And when I did resign, I didn't put up a fight. My petition to modify child support was denied. And they based my child support off of earnings potential, not actual earnings. I fell $8,000 into arrears, and I was fighting jail time as well as trying to keep my license. They tried to destroy me, but they didn't.
Well, I don't think they're going to. And I just pray they don't destroy your son. That's an amazing story. It's one of those conversations I went into not expecting this. So Dennis Hannon, Godspeed. Thank you for telling us that story.
God bless. Thank you for having me. I'm honored to be here and share this experience. I hope it helps save another parent or child from this.
I hope so, too. Thanks for listening to the Tucker Carlson Podcast. If you liked it, be sure to hit subscribe and leave a review. And remember, we only release some of our interviews as podcasts. The only place you can get all of it, including past episodes, is tuckercarlson.com, and we hope you will.